and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Chicago's financial condition could be getting worse with a new bill boosting police and firefighter pensions. And a look at the impact President Trump's mass deportation plans are having on home care workers and the families they help. First off tonight, some of today's top stories. A police reform bill named after Sonya Massey, who was killed by police in Springfield, is signed into law today. The bill comes more than a year after Massey was shot and killed in her home by a Sangamon County Deputy Sheriff Sean Grayson after calling 911 for help.
In my 25 years of elected office, this is the least political thing I have ever done, but it's the most important thing I have ever done. So when I spoke to Sonya's mother to try and console her, and she said to me, "Nothing else matters. It's not about the money. It's not about the attention. Nothing else matters to me. I just want you to get justice for my baby."
The legislation requires law enforcement agencies to review an applicant's work history, including their employment records, before hiring them. Records show Grayson had worked for 6 departments in 4 years and had 2 convictions for driving under the influence. He's facing murder charges in Massey's death and has pleaded not guilty. The case of whether Chicago police officers are targeting Black and Latino drivers with traffic stops could soon become a class action lawsuit. Attorneys for the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, previously filed the lawsuit on behalf of 5 Black and Latino plaintiffs who claimed they'd been repeatedly stopped by Chicago cops. That's both before and after filing the suit. If a federal judge agrees to certify the suit as a class action, meaning on behalf of all Black and Latino drivers ever stopped by CPD or ever will be in the future, it would sharply raise the stakes in the suit and pressure the city to settle to reduce the cost to taxpayers. The request relies on 2 new studies showing CPD's use of traffic stops disproportionately targeted Black and Latino Chicagoans. For more on those studies, please check out our website. Meanwhile, Chicago firefighters are one step closer to reaching a new contract. Mayor Brandon Johnson today confirmed the tentative agreement with Firefighters Union Local 2. If ratified, it would end a 4-year contract dispute. Crane Chicago Business is reporting the deal is retroactive and will include back pay and future raises. Up next, how a new pension bill could make Chicago's money problems even more complicated. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Illinois House Bill 3657 gives a pension boost to firefighters and police officers. At issue is whether Chicago can afford it. A warning from Wall Street ratings agencies S&P shows the bill will add $11 billion to the city's pension liabilities, deepen the city's projected 2026 deficit of $1.2 billion, and could lead to another credit rating downgrade. Joining us to figure these issues out are Austin Berg, executive director of the Chicago Policy Center, that's part of the Illinois Policy Institute, and author of The New Chicago Way. And Ralph Martiri, executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability and professor of public policy at Roosevelt University. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Welcome back.
Thanks, Brandis.
Okay, so the city's annual financial report found that at the end of 2024, Chicago's police and fire pension fund had funding levels close to 25%. A city analysis shows that the bill would hurt the progress and drop both pension funds to less than 18%. Austin, starting with you first, is this new law, is it working against the city's progress?
Absolutely. I would say this is one of the worst pieces of legislation since the parking meter deal for Chicagoans. And it's bad for the same reasons. One, it's financially irresponsible. You just showed in that graphic bringing them to 18% funded. These were already the worst funded police and fire pensions in the entire nation. It also adds pension debt at a time when Chicago's already paying more towards pensions and debt than any other big city in the nation. So that's the first reason, financially irresponsible. But it's also morally reprehensible in the same way the parking meter deal was, in that it saddles young Chicagoans, our kids and grandkids, with billions of dollars in liabilities. This bill costs $60 million in next year's budget. In 30 years, it's taking a $750 million chunk out of the budget. That's taking opportunities from kids and grandkids who had no part in this decision.
So the bill unanimously passed the General Assembly. The governor signed it. City Hall has expressed concern, but did not lobby against it necessarily. What does that tell you?
It tells me that politicians are not serious about solving the pension crisis in Illinois. And it's really irresponsible that Brandon Johnson did not speak up and tell the governor to veto this. I will say Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza had a great line about this bill, which was that her brother is a police officer, and she said, going from 25 to 18% funded, that's not securing the retirement of police and fire. Don't say this is about first responders. It's making their retirements more fragile and less secure. 18% is on the road to insolvency.
Ralph, how do you think this bill works against or towards the city's progress?
Well, I think you have to put everything in context, and that's really what's missing from the discussion. So part of context number one, it's an attempt at fixing part of the tier two pension problem the state of Illinois and local governments face. And
tier two meaning those who were hired after 2010?
Right. It's a lower pension benefit than what was provided before. The state passed it in 2010. As you know, they tried to save money with it. The problem is tier two falls out of the safe harbor for Social Security. So at a certain point, the state and the city would have to enroll all these workers into Social Security, which is far more expensive than the fix that the state put to this Chicago police and fire pension problems. But it's the first fix to tier two. What's irresponsible, we'll all agree with Austin, is the state should have funded this. I mean, as part of the legislation that exempted themselves from the state mandates law, they would have had to fund this. And they're fixing a problem, state legislators and the governor, that they created when they created Tier 2. So throwing this cost on the city really makes no sense. It's something the state should assume because the state created the problem in the first place. And the state could assume it by adjusting a couple of things they're doing right now without raising taxes on anyone. I mean, number one, there's a local revenue source called the personal property replacement tax that's supposed to only go to local governments. Well, the state's been dipping into it the last few years, and last year, in fact, they dipped into it to the tune of 11.5% took away from local governments. That's $36 million they cost the city of Chicago alone. Just stop doing that. There's $36 million. The cost of this bill next year is $52 million. No one pays more in taxes, and the city's just getting to collect its local revenue source. The second one is the local government distributive fund, where the state of Illinois shares its income tax revenue with local governments. When the state increased its income tax rate, it cut the share local governments get out of this fund to keep them at the old rate. Just going back to the old share, there's $235 million. Once again, no one pays more in taxes. The city of Chicago's made whole.
All right, so I want to come back to the state later on if there's time, but give us a little bit of context, Ralph, because our pension funding levels pale in comparison to the national average, which is 70%. We're talking 25 down to 18% now after passage of this bill. How did we get here?
Well, we got here primarily not by benefits or anything innate to the pension systems. We got here because for generations, the state of Illinois, once again, you got to include the state, Brandis. The state of Illinois enacted legislation that allowed the city of Chicago to underfund its pensions, building up an unfunded liability. And in fact, you look at the growth in the unfunded liability, it's now standing at about $36, $37 billion, which is a lot of money. 26 of that grew in a 20-year period just recently, almost all of which was due to underfunding. Pensions, benefits, and salaries actually didn't add to that increase at all. The other things that added to it were changes in assumptions and investment losses during the recessions.
So the city did what a lot of folks are calling kicking the can down the road, basically.
And the state enabled them.
Okay, and I'm sure the state would have words about that as well, but they're not here tonight. So we've got you two. So this new pension bill, it makes some major changes, Austin. It changes the way the CPD employees' final average salary is calculated. So it used to average the last 8 years. Now it is the higher average of either the last 8 years or the last 4 years. What's the impact of that shift?
Well, it's $11 billion in new liabilities that we can't afford. And by the way, the state can't afford that either. So the idea that the state is going to pay for this, especially while Chicago's asking for a bailout for CTA and Chicago Public Schools, that they were going to take on this new pension benefit, I think is ridiculous. I also think it's a total red herring. And the bill sponsor said this, and Ralph's saying it tonight, this idea that this was to fix safe harbor. Safe harbor is a rule from the IRS that says if you're a government worker and you're not getting Social Security, you better get a benefit that's as good as Social Security. So safe harbor makes sense. But saying that this sweetener was about safe harbor is like saying I heard a leak in my basement, so I demolished my house and I bought a new one next door. It is a sweetener, it's not a fix. And even though the bill sponsor said this actually does not fix safe harbor. So we need to be serious about this. We cannot keep giving these new benefits because as we've seen, this is how we got here, way over promising and underfunding, and this is doing that even more. And generations of Chicagoans will pay for this irresponsible behavior.
Ralph, how will this impact Chicago taxpayers?
You know, like I said, it doesn't have to impact them at all. I mean, the state could right now cover this payment by just shifting some of the ways it shares revenue with local governments, period, end of story, and it should do that. It has every responsibility to do that because the fix it's making, and I just disagree with Austin, it does address Tier 2, and frankly, we're going to be looking
at higher... The bill sponsor said it does not.
Can I finish?
Sure.
We're going to be looking at higher pension costs across the board for our defined benefit systems because every analysis shows that they are falling out of the tier, out of the safe harbor. And so tier two benefits have to go up. And this is a problem the state created. So it's a problem the state should fund. And unlike local governments, the state has more revenue options in its toolkit to deal with the problem. The city of Chicago is far more restricted in its revenue flows. And really, if you trace these fiscal connections together very clearly, the reason we over rely on property taxes to fund schools and do all these other things, and our property tax burden is relatively high in Illinois, even though our overall tax burden state and local combined is Midland, is because the state doesn't fund what it should be funding. It should step to the plate. It created this problem. It should fund the problem. And there are ways to do it.
Austin?
$750 million in 30 years. That could pay for thousands of potholes being filled. It could pay for thousands of new positions in our schools. It could pay for police and fire. Instead, it's going down the drain to pensions and debt. And it's going to be paid for by people who are not even born yet today. And that is morally irresponsible. By the way,
but you're ignoring, the additional costs that they're going to have to pay for Social Security.
Please let me finish, Ralph. I let you finish. So safe harbor, again, we're hearing that we need to do this to fix safe harbor. The feds are going to come down our throats. There was not a single actuarial analysis presented to the public before this passed in Springfield showing that that was a problem, when and who was affected by this safe harbor issue. So you can't say, pass billions and billions of dollars onto the backs of young Chicagoans and say, just trust us, it's going to fix this problem.
So then what is the alternative? Because we have heard from the state is not coming to save Chicago on likely any number of things. We just talked about Chicago Public Schools on this program last night. The deal is done. The bill is done. So how is the city going to pay for it?
Well, the city's going to have a really hard time paying for it. So I think there's three things that need to be done. One, all new employees should not be going into these sorts of defined benefit pensions. If that was a consumer product, it would have been taken off the shelves long ago. It's really doing harm to the city of Chicago and to retirees. Second, constitutional amendment to say we protect pension benefits that have been earned to date, but going forward in the future, we have to have changes there to protect retirement security and to protect taxpayers. And third, and this speaks to political courage, which we have not seen from anyone in Springfield or in Chicago, we need to allow, in Illinois, just as Texas and California do and 23 other states, municipal bankruptcy, Chapter 9 bankruptcy. And bankruptcy is a heavy word, but Chapter 9 is the only way we're going to be able to get debt relief for young Chicagoans who had had billions of dollars poured onto them by mistakes of the past. You can renegotiate pensions in that court, and you can renegotiate things like the parking meter deal, bad, corrupt deals.
Real quick, Ralph?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's the most irresponsible. You talk about irresponsibility. Letting the public sector declare any kind of bankruptcy is about as irresponsible as you could get. That's number one. Number two, we're blaming the benefits here when the benefits aren't the problem at all. It's been the irresponsible approach to funding the benefits. And in fact, this increase in benefits was needed to bring us at the tier two. We're going to tier two up to the safe harbor. We're going to need more increases in benefits across the board to get there. Number three, the benefits haven't contributed to the growth in the unfunded liability in the last 20 some odd years. It's all been irresponsible underfunding, investment losses in the couple of recessions, and changes in assumptions. So the state can and should fix these problems by adjusting some of its revenue policies. And frankly, we could fix the city of Chicago's pension problems by reamortizing the debt. This costs nothing.
And that is where we have to leave it. I love that, you know, you numbers guys, you show up with your 3, 4, 5, 6-point plans. I appreciate it, but we're going to have to leave it there. Austin Berg, Ralph Martire, thanks to you both. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And for an introductory explainer on why Chicago's pension debt is so high, please check out our website, WTTW.com/explains. We're back with more right after this. And we will get back to our program in just 2 minutes for our conversation about threats to the home care worker industry. But I wanted to take a moment to talk to you about something that I believe is very important, and that is the independent journalism we bring to you each and every night. We're at a pivotal moment. Congress has cut all federal funding for public broadcasting. That funding helped ensure that stations like ours could share trusted news and information like we do on Chicago Tonight, reach children in underserved areas, and reflect the diversity of our communities. And while that funding is gone, our mission is not. But we're not here to talk about endings. We're here to talk about what comes next, because with your help, the story continues. We're asking viewers to become members to allow us to continue the essential work we do. And when you become a member today, your contribution will be doubled through a generous matching grant. You can help us with a donation of any size by calling 773-588-1111, going to WTTW.com, or scanning the QR code on your screen. We can't thank you enough for the support that you have provided over the years, and that support has always made the difference. Public media has always been powered by people who believe in something bigger. You've proven that. And now we move forward together. At WTTW News, we bring you independent journalism, which is essential to our democratic society. We are responsible not to corporate interests, but to you, our viewers. We work hard to combat misinformation and disinformation. We provide fact-based reporting that lets you decide how to use that information. And we tackle complex topics and information because we respect you, our audience. We need your help, not just to survive, but to thrive. If you're already a donor, thank you. If you're not, double your impact with your donation to WTTW right now by calling 773-588-1111, going to WTTW.com, or scanning the QR code on your screen. Because what we built together isn't just worth preserving, it is worth strengthening. We're moving forward with you at the heart of it. We hope that you find what we do valuable here at WTTW News, Chicago Tonight, and throughout the day and night on WTTW. So please consider supporting us at whatever level is best for you, because we are in this together, and thank you. Chicago Tonight returns in just a moment. Mass deportation efforts are starting to impact the healthcare workforce. The U.S. Census shows more than half of home care aide workers in the Chicago metro area are non-U.S. citizens. But agencies and clients have started to report issues with immigrant employees showing up for work for fear of ICE raids. Those in the industry believe these actions could shrink an already understaffed workforce. Joining us now with more are Dr. Stephanie Woolhandler, Distinguished Professor of Public Health and Health Policy at Hunter College in New York City, and Michelle Garcia, Latinx Community Organizer for Access Living. Thanks to you both for joining us. Dr. Woolhandler, you co-authored a study on this very topic. What did you find?
Well, we found that there's 3.4 million immigrants working in healthcare. More than a million of those immigrants are non-citizens. There's about 400,000 undocumented non-citizens working in healthcare. A lot of those folks are working as nurses' aides, nursing assistants, the backbone of the home care and nursing home workforce. So if those folks are deported, we're going to have huge shortages of staff for the home care sector, for the nursing home sector. That's going to cause a double whammy with hospitals. They're going to lose some of their own workers, but they're also going to find that when patients are over their acute illness and ready to go home but need some help at home or some help at a nursing home, there just won't be staff to provide that help, and the hospitals will get, you know, blocked up. They won't be able to discharge people, causing problems throughout the healthcare system. And so these mass deportations are going to be a terrible problem for the U.S. healthcare system.
And Michelle Garcia, you have cerebral palsy. You use a motorized wheelchair to get around. How has this shortage been impacting you so far?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. And I wanted to clarify, I'm the manager of organizing at Access Living. I was an organizer for Latinx community organizing previously. But yeah, so the impact it has had on me as an organizer and as the work that I do. So I have had to shift the way I work. I've been working more so obviously from home because it's been harder to get someone to come and support me at home. I depend on healthcare workers, immigrant healthcare workers that is, to come and support me at home to get ready for the day and do my daily living activities, to be able to be out and about. So if I don't have that support, it's very difficult for me to go to work or to events that I need to be at. So there has been a shift in the way I do things.
And Michelle, give us a sense, if you would, of what kind of tasks you need the healthcare workers for, as far as like preparing to go out and about and daily living lives like everyone else.
Of course. Yeah. So I need support in cleaning my home, my meal prepping, personal care, getting ready for the day, as dressing, bathing, et cetera, as it is. So all of that I need support with, and it's not just myself, it's my partner as well. So
right. I think you've shared with us previously that your partner also has a disability and needs home health care help.
Yes.
As well, which obviously it sounds like a lot for you to manage and coordinate, especially if there's a shortage of workers. Dr. Woolhandler, why do you think we see such large numbers of immigrants working in this field and in nursing homes?
Well, many immigrants come here with the skills and attitude that you need to be an effective worker. They've often taken care of sick or elderly relatives at home their entire life. They've seen sick and elderly people cared for in the home. They get the skills of doing that, and they get the attitudes that's a fine job. It is underpaid, and I know people need more pay and they need more regular hours. But home care workers don't hate their jobs. They like taking care of people, and we need folks who feel that way. And so many of them have been immigrants, particularly the growth in workers in this field, about half of it has been immigrant labor. So we are really going to be in a bad situation if immigrants are deported. It's not going to be possible to replace all of these people. I do want to say, I meet a lot of immigrant health workers. There are people who come here to live safely and to work, and we need to respect the work that they're doing for us.
Michelle, you had to go about 3 weeks without an aide because of the situation. How did you manage to care for yourself and your husband at the time?
Yes, for sure. So I was speaking previously that just yesterday, late last evening, yesterday, the person came to support myself. So it had been about 3 weeks without the support. And how I manage is, I do what I can for myself and for my husband. We have the blessing that we have friends and family that come to our rescue. that as much as we have friends and family that come to our rescue, they're not ill-equipped, they're not, healthcare workers that know exactly how to move a person here or help me transfer there this way or that way. They're, it is very difficult for a family member or friend to be depending on them at all times. So definitely that's how I get by, but it is not ideal, right?
Of course. Dr. Wohlhandler, we've got about 30 seconds left. Could the effects of these mass deportations worsen over time for this sector?
Absolutely. We're just starting to see the mass deportations. The president is ending temporary protected status for a lot of groups, Haitians, Venezuelans, Cubans, who have provided a lot of home care workers, and that's being phased out over the next weeks or months. So we're definitely going to see the situation get worse.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Best of luck to you both. My thanks to Michelle Garcia and Dr. Stephanie Wohlhandler.
Thanks.
And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines.